another day. Another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hello, folks. This is Jack Spearco with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times and the things that we can do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. This is episode 73, as long as I have everything right in my brain. And it is Tuesday, October 14th, on a morning commute from my personal mobile studio, traveling 50 miles between Arlington and Frisco, Texas, to get to my office and spend a day up there working with my staff. And as usual, I'll have you guys with me, and we'll be having a conversation until things change from a technology and time standpoint. It'll be a one-way conversation, but a conversation nonetheless. And remember, you can always comment, make suggestions, and do things like that at thesurvivalpodcast.com. If you want to give me input about today's show or any show that I've done in the past or will do in the future, just comment in the comment section for the individual episode at thesurvivalpodcast.com. If you want to get into more in-depth discussions, check out our forum. We have well over 200 members in less than 3 weeks. We have something like 3,500 posts going on right now. So there's a lot of discussion on a lot of topics, everything from gardening and homesteading to weapons, guns, and ammunition. You name it, we're talking about it, patriotism. There's even a tinfoil hat brigade for you conspiracy theorists and folks that think that they know the answer to every question and we're all being lied to. Hey, I gave you your own board, so keep the real conspiracy topics in that board, and we'll be all cool and copacetic with each other. Anyway, I want to get on to the topic of today's show, which is going to be the patriotic aspect of gardening and permaculture, which may sound like two totally divorced things. How is patriotism part of growing things in the ground in your backyard? And I think by the end of this show, you'll understand partially at least why that's true. But before I do, we have something we have to attend to. I announced a winner twice on the show of the listener appreciation contest, and that listener did not respond to me. I sent him three emails, announced him twice on the show, and have not heard back, which means we have got to pick a different winner because somebody's getting the prize. I'm not going to cheap out and say, well, nobody responded, so nobody gets it. So here's how we're going to do this. I don't want to go through this again. And I figure the best way to do this is to give this prize to somebody that joined the contest and is following the spirit of the contest, which is telling others. That means that the people that did that are probably still listening. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to give you a code word. All right? And the third, and this is going to make this tricky for you, the third email I receive with this code word in it will be the winner. Okay, so how this is going to work, I'm going to give this code word, you're going to hear it. You're just going to send an email to jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, all right, with the code word in the subject line. If the code word is not in the subject line, I will not consider it a valid entry. In the body of the email, you will say, Jack, I entered the contest, and my email I used for that contest was, and you'll give me the email address that you used to enter the contest. Take the third person, and I will verify that they did enter the contest prior to its end date. So if you did not enter the contest, don't bother, because you will be disqualified. So if you entered the contest, you send me an email, code word in the subject line, email address you used in the body. The third accurate entry I get, okay, I will announce tomorrow as the winner, and that way we know we'll have a winner. And go ahead and tell me whether you want an iPod or silver, okay? Again, the email to send this code word to and the email address that you entered with, jackofthesurvivalpodcast.com, code word will go in the subject line with nothing else. If it's not that way, I'm going to consider it an invalid entry. The code word is Patriot Garden. Again, the code word, Patriot Garden. Don't think you don't have a chance to win, that you've listened to the show too late or too early or what have you. Go ahead. If you've entered the contest and you're hearing this now, send me an email, code word in the subject line, Patriot Garden, email address in the body of the email that you used to join, and which of the two prizes you prefer. So tomorrow we'll have a valid winner of this. I guarantee you, I've just flooded my email box with about 200 emails probably. So Anyway, I'll dig through those, but it's going to be caller number 3, like they say on the radio, but it'll be emailer number 3. And we might start doing more contests like this, and with this pool that I've got in that contest. So if you haven't joined the Listener Appreciation Contest yet, please go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, click on Listener Appreciation Contest, take a look at it. You won't be winning an iPod this time. I'm going to change that. I need to change the copy of that page. I just haven't had the time to do it, but we'll keep doing prizes. I'm going to start looking for like, we'll call them mini sponsors. Instead of being a sponsor of the whole show, they'll provide an item that I can give away into this, and that'll give them exposure. So I'm probably going to keep doing it this way in the future, all right? And it won't always be emailer number 3. It might be emailer 25. It might be emailer number 1. So get in the contest, but just remember, this is an honor, on your honor contest, all right? If you're not going to tell people, don't enter, all right? I mean that. It's just not fair to the people that are really trying to spread the word around here. So again, code word, Patriot Garden, third emailer wins. Follow the instructions exactly or I will disqualify you. All right, on Patriot Garden, let's get on with the topic of today's show. How did this topic come up? Well, this is what I decided to do. Everybody's flipping out about the stock market, and I'll probably say a little bit about that today, just because I think you guys need to understand that this is all kind of, timeline was wrong, but everything that I said was going to happen with this mess is happening exactly the way I said it would. We're seeing the spike that I called. It just took longer to happen, and we're going to see the other side of it fall out, but let's not worry about that. We've been ramrodded. The market, the Dow. The only thing that matters to the economy, you would think, is the Dow, right? So we've been ramrodded with that. We've been ramrodded with Obama and McCain and Palin and Biden. And, you know, if you look, watch the news on, like, Fox News or CNN or anything like that right now, if you watch it for 30 minutes, you're going to hear 20 minutes on those two things, the election and the market, right? And I got to thinking, you know, through this year, we've had some pretty alarming items come up, some pretty alarming statistics released, not just about financial, about many things, about the state of the oil reserves, all these different things. And could I go find one that was really white hot at the beginning of the year that everybody's just forgotten about, but the actual problem hasn't gone away? Lo and behold, I found an article from February 2008, and I couldn't even find the original article. Maybe it was only in hard copy, but the original source article is from the Financial Times. And basically what it says is that a food shortage will be the next global crisis. And people picked up and ran with this thing. There's a newsletter that I get every day in my email box about the financial markets. I suggest you subscribe to it. It's called The Daily Reckoning. They picked it up. Some of the bloggers that I've syndicated other content on my show for, what I've done around the net, picked it up. So some of the bloggers you probably know, if you read Survivalist News, for instance, picked this story up. It was everywhere. It was hot. People were concerned about it. Mainstream media was talking about it. Alternative media was talking about it. And casual bloggers were talking about it. Financial sector publications were talking about it. Where is it today? What they're saying today is, well, food prices are dropping because of a global slowdown to the global growth spurt. Well, what people don't understand, or I guess people just forgot, or people don't care to recall, is that this article never said that it was a big deal that food would be high-priced or low-priced, other than it's an investment opportunity. The real problem was the fact that there would be a global food shortage, and that for the first time in history, the United States could end up on the wrong end of it. Now, for us, most likely what it would result in is escalating prices, because we have enough wealth in this country, even with the market crash, even with everything else, that we can spend enough to bring food into our country and take it away from other people who can't pay as much. In other words, we can almost always come out the highest bidder, at least right now, as long as the economy isn't somewhat intact. And as bad as things seem on Wall Street, buddy, I'm telling you what, we still got a hell of a lot more money to bring food into this country with than a country like Cameroon or Nigeria or even Australia does. All right? We can bring food into the country. The alarming statistic in this article, though, that everybody's all, just gone, forget about it, doesn't, it hasn't changed, it's gotten worse. that we this year in the United States have become a net importer of food. In other words, up until very recently, even though we imported a lot of food, we exported a lot of food. And it was the one shining star in our trade arena. Because we have a huge trade deficit with countries like China. We obviously import a lot more from China than we export to China. The same thing with Japan. But when it came to food, what we were doing was we were exporting more than we were importing. That's changed. This is the same thing that occurred in the oil markets a long time ago. You see, what most people don't realize is that the United States has huge, massive oil reserves. At one time, we were the world's largest producer of oil from our own soil. We still produce huge amounts of oil from our own country, in spite of the fact that it's claimed that we don't drill on our own soil, we're not pumping our own oil. It's completely ridiculous. We pump billions of gallons a day out of the ground. The problem is, we are using tens of billions of gallons a day. So we got to a point where our economy and our society was drawing more on the fuel reserves than we could produce for ourselves. So we had no choice. If we wanted to continue the growth of this economy based on the motor vehicle and based on electrical facilities that burn oil, that burn coal, that burn natural gas, that burn all these fossil fuels, we had to start supplementing. We went into an economy where we were importing more oil than we were producing or exporting, making us dependent on foreign sources for our oil. We've all seen what the results of that are. We've had a lot of bloodshed over that oil. And the real far left that scream, oh, we can't go to war for oil. Okay, how do you get to work every day? Is your house completely lined with solar panels, all right? The problem is, when you build a society on oil, and something threatens to take away your supply, you only have two choices. And that is, you either allow the society to suffer and decay, or you get rid of the threat. My big problem with war for oil is it's become war for profit. And not just oil profit, it's become war for profit on building weapons and supplying weapons. And we have weapons companies and manufacturers of various goods and services supplying both sides of a war, making a fortune on it. And the federal banks, but that's neither here nor there. The point is that when you become dependent on foreign nations for a resource, that they have control over you. And if they begin to exercise that control, you're put into a situation where you have two choices. You either do without, or you use your force, be it diplomatic or military, to undo the damage, to force them to stop doing whatever they're doing to shut you down. All right? Now, you can say that our society needs oil. And to a large degree, we do, if we want to function the way that we function today. We need oil. We cannot change that overnight. We cannot adapt to it overnight. But the reality is, if we didn't have oil at all, we still have enough of the little bit of alternative energy that we've done, coal, natural gas, and our own oil, that if we had to, we could at least keep the lights and the power on. Transportation might be limited, gas might go through the roof, but if we had to live on what we can produce for ourselves with oil, right, no one would necessarily have to lay around and die. Alright? We would figure out a way. And a lot of the oil we're not pumping, we would start pumping. And a lot of the natural gas we're not pumping, and a lot of the things we're not doing with our natural gas that we should be, we would start doing. In other words, we would adapt. Alright? And while there would be some pain, no one's going to starve. Now we're doing this same formula with our food supply. Understand that. We are now doing this with our food supply. Our population is growing. It's not growing the way it is in some parts of the world, but it is growing. It's being fueled largely by illegal and legal immigration, because the people that are fourth and fifth generation Americans are having less children today than any time in history in this country. So we have a slow growth population, which is keeping us out of a real hell's basket for right now. But that's going to change. We're going to see as these segments of society that are growing get bigger, they produce more growth. So we're going to see a massive increase in population over the next 50 years. At the same time that we're seeing a decline in our ability to produce food, which is going to make us more dependent on foreign sources of food. The hell with foreign sources of oil. Oil we don't have to have. We can make another way. If we get into a position where we have 200 or 300 million Americans that have no concept of how to produce any food, and there's only 50 to 100 million of us that do, we're totally screwed. And one half of our agricultural land to deal with the foreign sources of oil problem ends up producing corn and sorghum and other crap that the government is forcing into biofuels. What does that tell you? We will not only be dependent on foreign sources of energy, we're going to be completely and totally dependent within 20 years on foreign sources of food if we don't pull our heads out of what we call in the military our fourth point of contact. And for you civilians, that means pull your head out of your ass. All right? That's where we're headed with food. That's what we're doing to ourselves. We are outsourcing the production of the very thing that nourishes people at the nutritional level. In other words, we'll get ourselves into a situation where 20, 30, 40% of our food is coming from outside the country. And then if our enemies ever choose to move against us, all they have to do is shut down that importation. And we're actually getting imported food from a lot of countries that don't exactly think we're the greatest, you know, nation in the world and are a little bit perturbed with us. And they have to make a decision. Do they want to put the screws to us or do they want our money? And what's happening at the same time all this is going on? Our government is printing monopoly money and devaluing our dollar, making our money worthless. Right? Not worthless, worthless. Not worthless yet, right? So as the dollar is declining in value, and we're becoming more dependent on countries that are choosing to take our money in return for food, that don't exactly aren't exactly thrilled with us, you see how that starts to work. Well, maybe I don't need your dollars anymore, Mr. American. Or maybe I need a hell of a lot more of them to give you the same amount of food. All right? This is how this system is all put together. This is how it's been set up. And now that you see how it's been set up, you might begin to understand how growing some portion of your own food may be today in 2008 one of the most patriotic duties that Americans can assume. If you think about it this way, if there were a way for you to walk out in your backyard, dig a hole with a shovel, and start producing some gasoline, you would do it. If you could produce 20 gallons of gas in your backyard, you'd probably do it. You'd also agree that it's probably pretty patriotic to get off your butt, pick up your shovel, and produce 20 gallons of gasoline, which for many Americans would be all they need. For a lot of Americans, it might be half of what the family uses. For some, it's a quarter. For some, it's 10%. Doesn't really matter. It's still 20 gallons. And if 100 million Americans started producing 20 gallons of gasoline, well, what is that? 200 or 20 billion gallons? 200 billion gallons a month. It'll be a pretty patriotic movement. If you were too lazy to get off your butt, you know, then go pay the high price at the pump. Now, even with gas was recently at $4 a gallon, and even though most Americans would say, yeah, 20 gallons to work with a shovel a few hours a day in my backyard, I'd do that. That's $80. Now, I did a, you know, what the value of a garden is, and a very small, modest garden is over $700 a year, and that's with one season of planting. That's not having a fall crop or a winter crop. That's not growing anything in a window box inside your home. And I showed you really easily in that podcast how it could be $3,000 or $4,000 easily. So basically what I'm telling you is you could go in your backyard and spend some time with a shovel. You could grow enough food to replenish your budget with an equal amount of money that you spend on your gasoline, or at least some portion of it, all right? So, at the same time that you would be doing that, before I go forward, just I wanted to put that in perspective for you. You know, yeah, if you went out and dug a hole and you could get gas out of it, you'd probably do it. So if you dig a hole and you get food out of it, and the food's worth more money, more cost, more expenditure of your energy at work, or through your employment, or through your investment, right, then the gas is, then go throw the food. It'll do a hell of a lot more for your soul than pulling gasoline out of a hole anyway. Now, the other thing you might consider is if you looked over in your neighbor's backyard and you saw a big SUV in his driveway, and everybody had figured this thing out about digging a hole every day to get a gallon of gas out of, or whatever it ended up being, and there were no holes in his yard, you'd probably go knock on his door and say, "Hey, James, hey, Rick, hey, Tom, whatever his name is, what the hell's wrong with you? You're in good shape. Don't you want to help out? Why are you spending all that money anyway? Don't you know there's gas in your own backyard? Why don't you dig it up?" Right? I mean, you could see that happening all over America, couldn't you? "Hey, Tom, hey, Rick, hey, Joan, hey, Jane. Hey, man, pick a shovel up. Help out here. Do something for your country. We don't need all this oil from the Arabs. If everybody provided half of what they need from their own backyard, we wouldn't have to import anything. Hell, you look a little bit older. Maybe you can't dig as many holes. You can do 10%. Hell, if everybody did 10%, we would just about get rid of it anyway. If it aggregated out to 25, we'd be in great shape." Folks, food works the exact same way. This is like the 1950s right now with oil. We could see it coming. We could see the deficit of trade in the oil industry developing. We went from being an exporter of oil, providing all our own needs and still selling some to the rest of the world, to being an importer. Unfortunately, there's no magic bean that you can plant in your backyard that will produce petroleum for you. Not on any level that's going to matter. You can make oil out of soybeans if you want to, or throw it out of diesel. But in reality, you're not going to produce 20 gallons of gas in your backyard from digging a hole. But there's plenty of magic beans that you plant in the ground. They turn into beanstalks and they produce beans that you can eat. Or vines that produce tomatoes or cucumbers that you can eat. There's magic little seeds that turn into salads. Right? And instead of eating a Caesar salad from 3,000 miles away, you can eat a Caesar salad that came from 30 feet away. And the satisfaction that you have and the quality of that product will blow away anything you can buy in a store. And if Americans begin to move now, if we go back to what our grandparents understood, that little garden plot would produce more than we could eat at any one time. Why do you think they canned and jarred and pickled? Well, people would say, well, they did that because they didn't have freezers and what have you, and they needed food for the winter, so they had to store it up, just like we do as survivalists. And oh, really? But the fundamental you're missing there is, why was there food available to do that with? You might go, what the hell is this guy talking about? What I'm saying is, the only way that you have extra green beans to jar or can, right? The only way that you have cucumbers that turn into pickles, the only way that you're pulling in that end of your harvest of everything to make chow chow relish, right? The only way you're slicing up zucchinis and drying them into dehydrated zucchini chips, the only way that you're taking potatoes and putting them into a pile of sawdust to keep them from touching each other so they'll store long term, or doing that with apples, the only way that you're developing techniques to keep certain foods away from each other so that the gases they produce don't decompose each other, the only way you're doing any of that crap is to have more than you can eat right now. So that apple tree and the pear tree in the yard, the grapevine that they made wine out of, and that little garden plot during its productive season produced more every day than they could consume. So they developed ways to stock this stuff up. If we'll just go back to that, we can head this thing off before it becomes reality. It is a patriotic duty at this point. If you love the ideal of this country, I'm not even going to say love this country, because there are, when you say love this country, you're including things like our government that is screwing all of us every day. All right? And I don't love that. But but I love America. I love its citizens. I love the ideal that it is. I love the foundation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And I don't want to see the last vestiges of what we have sold away to globalism. And this move of globalizing our food system, this invasive maneuver by Monsanto is a big part of this. Monsanto is going into these other countries able to enforce its patents so it still makes its money no matter where the food grows, which allows massive globalization of the food supply. And having a global food supply where we end up producing nothing. Don't think it can't happen. Don't think the great agricultural system of the United States can't fall to subdivisions and housing developments. It already has all over the Northeast. How many people, if you live in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, okay, those three states in particular, they have some of the richest, most fertile soil in the world. The Pennsylvania Dutch country has soil that's more fertile than central Germany, which at one time was the envy of the world. Pennsylvania. But you don't hear about agriculture that much in Pennsylvania anymore. How many people that live in states like that, Maryland, Delaware, right, that whole Northeast corridor, from Virginia to Maine, how many of you that have homes there have a home that's built on what used to be a farmer's field, and that farmer's field is gone? It already happened there. That's why we're in this mess in the first place. How many of you used to garden, but don't anymore? How many of you, your parents gardened, but you don't? And they've stopped. Right? This is the reality. This is what's happening. It happened with our manufacturing capability. We were the greatest manufacturer of goods and services in the world. Today, all we do is services. Our manufacturing capacity is dwindling left and right. Okay? We're going downhill. We're going downhill fast. We have massive trade deficits with goods all over the world. The only thing we have a surplus left of is food, and it's gone, and services. All right? With oil, it happened with oil. It's happened with just about everything that Americans used to be self-sufficient with. It's happened over and over and over again. And if you think about it, if the goal is a one-world socialist government with no more autonomy, and I believe that it is, I don't think that's conspiracy theory. I think there's people that really want that. They think it'll be wonderful. It'll be like Star Trek. We'll all be citizens of Earth. Okay? But we won't have autonomy. Our government is not supposed to be that way, and the ideal of our nation is not supposed to be that way. Even within America, and I'm an American, I'm a Texan, and Texans even under this bastardized version of what the states originally were, still has a certain level of autonomy. We can still choose to say, in many instances, we're not going to be like California, we're not going to be like Georgia, we're not going to be like Pennsylvania. All right, we're going to do what we want. We're going to run our own state down here. The federal has certain places where they say you can't go beyond here. And we have to stay within those measures. We still have autonomy as a state. What's going to happen if we don't have autonomy as a nation? And if we let our food, if we let our freaking food supply become an outsourced commodity, we're through. It's the only thing that we have left. And here's the good news. You, Joe American, really can't compete with the manufacturing capability of the Chinese. And you cannot compete with the oil production capabilities of the Saudi Arabians. But you can compete with anybody in the world in the ability to grow your own food. And I want you to have just a moment, just a momentary vision of one tiny thing that would change the entire dynamics of food production in this country. Think of a big subdivision that you either live in or you've driven through. Just suburban America, right? Not urban, suburban. Everybody's got trees, everybody's got a little lawn, everybody's got that. Let's not even talk about gardens. What if 20% of those trees produced fruits, nuts, berries, something like that, some type of food? 20% of the trees, instead of being Bradford pears that don't produce pears, they were Bartlett pears that did produce a pear. How much food would suburban America be producing today just from their trees? If one in five houses had a blackberry or raspberry or strawberry patch in the backyard, how much would that be? If one in five grew a couple rows of corn every year and a few pepper plants, how much food would that be? Start to do the math and start to understand that no matter what kind of agricultural BS has been spread, your parents did it, your grandparents did it, and your great-grandparents did it. And being told that we can't, being told there's not enough suburban land to produce food to make a real difference is a lie. All right. I keep mentioning these people, DeVayas's, out in Southern California. They produce 6,000 pounds of food on a freaking tenth of an acre. 6,000 pounds. They supply local restaurants with fresh greens because what they can provide is so much better than what can be provided from the big agricultural crops. They said when they first took their mixed greens into these places and said, here, we can do this, and we can do edible flowers with them. This is what your plate would look like that you would hand to your customer. They went, done! Just bring it. Come on. I'll take X amount a week if you can produce that much. Right? When can I get this? How often can I get this? What seasons can I not get this? Right? It was a lay-down sale because what they produced was such top quality. It's a tenth of an acre. It's a tenth of an acre. Just imagine what you could do if you have more. All right? Just imagine what you could do with if you took your tenth of an acre, right, and split it up into a quarter of a tenth, which is .25. What could you do with that? Huh? You could do a lot more than you think you could. You've got to really understand this. As an American, this is a patriotic duty at this point. Because we don't have to let this happen. There's a lot of people out there going, what can we do about this bailout? What can we do about these assholes on Wall Street? What can we do? What can we do? What can we do? I don't know. There's certain things I'm trying. There's certain things I'm doing. The show is one of them. But I don't really know how we get rid of these assholes on Wall Street and we get these assholes in the Capitol until Americans develop a spine and are willing to take a bet on a third-party candidate and put about, you know, one-third of our seats into the hands of the third parties. And until Americans are willing to take a gamble that the guy on the other side, the Republican or the Democrat on the other side, may not be a gay-bashing, right-wing freak or a liberal socialist gun grabber, all right? Until we're willing to turn that government over as a people, there's not much we can do about that problem. This is something we can do something about. You can't put an oil well in your backyard, but you can put a garden there. And right now, in the global marketplace, it has the same type of effect. It's still resources and dollars out of our country that you're preventing from going there. Think about that. That's what a Patriot Garden is really all about. It's about reclaiming what you have a birthright to, which is the land that you stand on in this nation, if you're a citizen. One of the biggest reasons people came here, I keep telling people this, and people don't get it. People didn't come here because of our pretty flag. They didn't just come here for our ideals and our concepts. They came here because in most parts of the world, it was almost impossible to own a piece of land of any value. If there was fertile land that would grow crops, the king owned it, or the czar owned it, all right? Or the nobility owned it. Or the rich would seize it and take it from you. There was no way that a middle class or poor person could own an acre that would produce anything. It would be seized, taken, or prevented from ever being achieved in the first place. But you could come here and get 40 acres for $1 an acre or less. You go to Oklahoma and claim 40 acres just by showing up sooner than the other guy. That's why they call it the Sooner State. Maybe people don't know that. That's why they call Oklahoma the Sooner State. Because what they did is they said, we're opening the Oklahoma territory. Any American citizen that wants 40 acres can have lay claim to it. We're going to do it on, I don't remember what the date was, but we're doing it on a specific date. People lined up the wagons and ran out and just claimed 40 acres and it was theirs. Amazing. That's why people came here for the land. And even if your plot of land is a tenth of an acre in suburbia, or a back porch on a condominium or an apartment, it's still yours. And what you grow on it is still yours, and what you grow in it or on it matters. So take it up as a duty It's a patriotic duty. And realize that it's one thing that when you do it, people notice. Your neighbor that you don't even talk to looks over the fence and sees you out there. He goes, hey, what are you doing? We're planting a garden. You know what? When the corn comes in, I'll give you a few cobs and go do it. Start spreading the spirit. Because it is what we can do. It is a way we can make a difference. And this is a deficit that we do not have to allow to occur. This is a populist movement that we actually can achieve. There's almost no way to shut it down. It would be you would have to see martial law to shut that down. How can you shut down a guy's garden in his backyard? All right? So start a garden if you have it. And think about permaculture crops as well. Not just agriculture. We've talked about this before, but think about trees that you can plant, bushes that you can plant, vines that you can plant that come back every year. Start getting involved with other people. Find out what they're growing in your neighborhood. Don't grow that. Grow something else. When you start planting trees, talk to neighbors and say, hey, you know, I don't have enough room for two apple trees. They do better with cross-pollination. I'll tell you what, I'll buy you a tree and give it to you if you'll plant it in this area of your yard, if that would be acceptable to you, because that'll put it where our two trees will cross-pollinate, and there's two different types of apples, and we'll share them with each other. And if that neighbor says no, ask another one. All right? At least ask the question. If they say no, they say no. Start spreading that word. Because that's how we'll take America back. We'll take America back by becoming self-sufficient. That's what it's about when I say live the life you want, whether times get tough or even if they don't. And tomorrow, I'm going to do a show on patriotic solar and wind energy, believe it or not. How those things can also be used that way. From very little things like solar ovens up to giant photovoltaic systems. And one of our listeners sent me an email about the $700 billion bailout that became an $850 billion bailout. And there was something in there that was good that I didn't know about, that most people don't know about, that nobody's really talking about. And it was a solar energy incentive, an improvement to an existing one. It's a big improvement. I'll tell you about that tomorrow, and I'll tell you tomorrow how you can start using solar energy the same way. But today, just grab onto this concept. To grow a garden may be the most patriotic thing you can do as an American today, and it's easy, and all it requires is a little bit of sweat, and a little bit of effort, and a little bit of gained knowledge. And if your grandparents could do it, and your great-grandparents could do it, and your parents could do it, then you can do it too. So join with me and start building that better life. Again, this has been Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.